Welcome to Issues in Education, a nationwide program dedicated to moral and academic excellence in America. And now, here are your hosts for Issues in Education, Bob and Jerry Boyd.
Welcome to Issues in Education, and a special warm welcome to station KIXL in Austin, Texas. I thank God for all of the stations that tell the truth, because the secular media has the power to take reality and distort it, and then present it to the masses as news. So much of what is given as news is not news, but it should be on the editorial page, not the front page. TV news is the same thing. They interview scholarly-sounding people who represent the pro-abortion side and interview them in a law office or a doctor's office with lots of books in the background. But the pro-life representative, who is given much less time, is many times an elderly person in tennis shoes holding up a hand-painted sign as she stands outside an abortuary yelling at people. To the general public, which is the more credible representative? Bias in the media is less obvious but extremely effective when they leave out certain vital issues such as the importance of religion in the average person's life. According to a recent poll, religion was very important to 57% of our U.S. population and fairly important to another 30% of the population. That's a total of about 87% of the citizens of this country who say religion is very important. But it's ignored in the media, except unless it's a sex scandal or something that would discredit the church. Yet on any given Sunday, half the nation's citizens are in church. But just watching TV, you'd think that no one was interested in religion, and certainly no one goes to church. The media has been on a long liberal crusade against Christianity, and trying to make homosexuality and abortion acceptable. How do these people in the media get so skilled in their bias in literally changing the way our nation thinks? Well, almost all of the people in media are products of our school system. And the schools have highly refined their skill at keeping religion and God away from everything in life. Many of you have heard about the massive research done by Paul Vitz of New York University. He analyzed American school textbooks for their religious content. His work has become a classic. There is perhaps no better evidence of the bias against religion, even to the point of rewriting history in the textbooks, than Paul Vitz's study, Censorship, Evidence of Bias in Our Children's Textbooks. Our guest is Professor Paul Vitz, professor of psychology at New York University, and author of the books Psychology as Religion and Censorship, Evidence of Bias in Our Children's Textbooks. Dr. Vitz, your comprehensive research led you to carefully examine a huge percentage of our nation's American history textbooks, social studies textbooks, and English readers. Dr. Vitz, tell our listeners about your study.
It was a study sponsored by the U.S. government. They gave me the research money to look at public school textbooks and to see how they treated religion, see how they treated family values, and other issues. And I looked at a very large sample that was representative of the country's public school text. In the case of the social studies textbooks, I looked at 10 major publishers, and I looked at 6 texts, that is grades 1 through 6 for each of them. So I looked at 60 textbooks, and these 10 were the only textbooks allowed in California and the states of Texas. So we're talking about the entire social studies curriculum for those two states. And since those states sort of set the agenda on textbooks for most of the others, we're probably talking about 75% of the social studies textbooks used in the country.
So it's pretty vast.
Very large, yes.
Dr. Vitz, what did you find?
Well, first I looked at religion in the social studies textbooks. And what I found was this. First of all, there was not one word, actually a word used in the textbooks, that referred to religion as an important part of life in contemporary America. There wasn't a single phrase or word that said American people were religious and religion was important today.
I get upset when I hear that. This implies that religion is not important to Americans, and that's a distortion. Look, religion is the greatest motivator behind those in the pro-life movement. It's not just a distortion, it's a lie. Look at the impact the religious right had at the Republican National Convention in writing the party platform. Dr. Vitz, are you saying the word God wasn't even ever used?
Well, I didn't come across the word with reference to contemporary life at all. Essentially, religion was left out of American life today.
So if somebody from another country were reading these books, they might think the American people had no interest in religion.
They'd probably think America was the least religious country in the world, when, of course, instead, it's probably the opposite.
And contemporary meaning the 20th century or what?
Well, let's say, yeah, the 20th century and today.
Mm-hmm.
Let me explain. These social studies texts are designed to introduce the child in grades 1 through 6 to the nature of American life today. That is, what is our social, political, or economic life like? The American history was also treated in a very interesting way. There were some references to religion and to God in American history books, but those were only to religion in, well, let's say the 1600s and the 1700s. Mm. By 1800, almost 200 years ago, certainly 150 years ago, religion had almost dropped out of their description of American life.
Implying that religion was just for people who lived long ago, before the scientific era, and that God was just for primitive people who had no real understanding. This isn't history, this is propaganda. What about the pilgrims? They couldn't eliminate God when it came to the pilgrims. These were very religious people.
For example, I found one, I found two books. They were actually the same book with a different publisher, the same material. It was 30 pages on the pilgrims, and this was in a first or second grade text, and it gave you 30 pages of pictures and words about the pilgrims and the first Thanksgiving. And there was no reference to religion in any way as present in the life of the pilgrims.
I can't believe that.
Well, isn't that why the pilgrims came to this country?
Exactly.
Wasn't it very important?
Of course it was. That's probably the single most important reason why they came here. Thanksgiving means you give thanks to God. That's what it was all about.
Is it any wonder, then, that these children grow up to become the news media, and they don't know anything about the influence of God and God's people when they're taught this is history?
Well, this is a very serious bias. I'll give you an example. I had just finished scoring that text when I got a letter from a mother who lives in Westchester County, New York. That's just outside of New York City. It's a rather rich county. And her son had come back from a public school there, and it said that the teacher had told her that Thanksgiving was when the pilgrims gave thanks to the Indians.
Oh, brother.
Oh, I'd heard that. Isn't that terrible?
I couldn't believe it. She sent me the note, and I sent her a letter back and told her that this was absolutely wrong, and she had something of an argument with the principal, and finally I think the principal backed down, but the facts being what they are, of course.
So they're teaching the children lies.
Well, of course. And the way they do it is interesting. And this is important because it's hard to observe this. The way they do it is they leave religion, and for America that means Christianity, they leave it out.
Well, I guess they would justify by saying they're trying to be religiously neutral.
That's how they, I guess, would justify it, or something about separation of church and state, some ridiculousness. But they leave it out. And that's the classic way in which bias shows up in the United States. You leave something out.
Well, that's a definition of a lie, too, though, when you leave it out, the truth.
Yes, it's the sin of omission.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very definitely a kind of lie. But that's how they do it. And it's very clever because it's hard to notice. If you don't find it in the first grade book, well, then you say, well, maybe they'll get it next year. And you have to look at the whole set before you see that there's a really major bias here.
When they have that bias and they leave out religion, they're really leaving a lot of the important elements of why Americans acted as they did out.
Of course. Absolutely. You're right. They leave out all sorts of things that are religious about American society. Of course, it was founded by Christians. There were major Christian motivations behind the settling, not only in New England, but in Virginia. The Spanish who came here settled more toward the south in Florida or in Central America or parts of California. They had a major Christian motivation as well.
So what we're doing is we're training young people to be without religion, to have no interest in religion.
Right, that there's no interest in it would come out of this, that religion is unimportant would come out of this, and so on. And you had other things like pilgrims are people who take long trips.
Oh, no.
That's right.
Oh.
That's right.
On a pilgrimage or something?
It sounds like a tourist, I think. But anyway, I mean, it really got ridiculous. It's pathetic.
Yeah, it really
is. And where they mention religion, sometimes they do it in a defaming way, such as having a part of the Salem witch trials.
Oh, yeah, the witch trials got in there. You're right. It would they would refer more negatively to religion than they would, let's say, to other social phenomena in the country. So it's very clear that they mostly left religion out. There was some actual positive bias against it, but mostly they would leave it out, and by leaving it out, distort our history and imply that religion was unimportant.
A misrepresentation of American culture, though, because there are so many people that do attend church and that are religious in America.
You're absolutely right. Any good anthropologist coming to study life in the United States would immediately note the importance of religion. And so these people were very bad social scientists to do this.
Well, not only bad social scientists, but bad historians. George Washington.
You're right.
You know, George Washington.
Continue. You're absolutely right.
George Washington's farewell address had some religious content, and some of the political speeches that we read about had religious content. And to leave that out because it had religious content is really to misrepresent what our country was and what it is today.
Absolutely, it's a misrepresentation. Well, when this study came out, I was interested in the reactions to it. There were a couple of very liberal political organizations that did their own studies on the same or similar sets of textbooks, and they came to the same conclusion.
Mm.
People for the American Way, for example, did a study, and I could have quoted their findings as the same thing as what I found, and everyone agreed. There was terrible bias.
It's very
and
obvious.
The bias was omission. Now, they had certain things in there. They had a lot of pro-feminist stuff.
Of course.
As you might imagine. And they had nothing that was pro-family values.
Mm-hmm.
They even had a lot of liberal politicians who were given a lot of coverage, while conservative politicians were not.
Do you feel that there was some kind of a conspiracy here?
No, I just think the people who write these textbooks are themselves unreligious and secular, very liberal, and they don't understand that the world that they think of as normal is abnormal for large numbers of other Americans.
Mm, I see. Well, Dr. Vitz, since you did this research and you've alerted people to the fact that there has been a deliberate omission of religion, in other words, a bias against religion, has there been anything done to correct it?
Yes, there have been some. The state of California now has, I think, a mandate that where religion is treated and appropriate for a textbook, it has to be given a fair and accurate representation.
Does that mean they're going to put religion back into the textbooks?
Well, not really. It means some people will do a little bit of changing, and there will be, let's say, some modest improvement.
And the pilgrims will still give thanks to the Indians?
I don't know whether that will continue. I would hope not, but it likely could. And so as I began to see how hard it was for the huge bureaucracy of modern education, which is also a monopoly, how hard it was for it to change, I began to think much more about the problem of public education. And I realized that as a monopoly, that like any organization, they would have to pick one or maybe two, but not very many. They'd have to have essentially one basic philosophy of education. Well, as soon as you put it that way, you realize that there are a lot of different philosophies of education, so whichever one the public schools pick, that one will disenfranchise all the people who believe in the other philosophies.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've seen with the omission of God and religion in the textbooks.
And they've picked a particular philosophy of education, which is secular.
You could even say atheist philosophy of education.
Yes, it's more skeptical, I'd say, than atheist, but because they do throw in New Age stuff, you know, every now and then.
Right.
So I would say it's skeptical and non-Christian. Often anti-Christian. So what it means is that whenever you have a single school system, it must be a bias against all the people who don't believe in the philosophy of education they pick.
Right, which doesn't really give them much choice. They're paying to support a school that teaches their children a bias different than their bias.
Right. And if all the public schools were democratic, why would Republicans want to pay for them?
Sure.
Bureaucracies that are monopolies have never in history changed from inside. So they won't change, even if they wanted to, they probably couldn't because of the bureaucratic inertia.
Mm-hmm.
So once you recognize that, you realize that something has to be done to challenge the public schools.
Exactly.
You've got to challenge them from outside, even if they're ever going to change at all. And even more, you have to have some way to challenge them from the outside that gets rid of this bias problem. And that's why I came to the conclusion, as have many other people, that we need much more choice and freedom in education.
That's good. And that applies to many different areas. Like, some people may want prayer in schools. Others don't want prayer in schools.
Sure.
There may be values that the Christians have. They want to see some mention of God and the great awakenings, the spiritual revivals. Other people may not want that. So we need to give people a choice.
Absolutely. I mean, right now, we're so restricted. We can talk about condoms, and in fact, we're forced to, here in New York City, talk about them and pass them out and make them available, but we can't even mention the name of God. That's absurd, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
Just absurd.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, so anyway, that's where we are. And we've got, therefore, to break the monopoly and the bureaucratic stranglehold of the public schools.
Well, we give people a choice as to what grocery store to shop at.
Why not? And give what them restaurant to go to.
Sure. Well, some people might say, are you suggesting the government fund religious schools?
They should fund any school that is adequate. We've already been doing it for a long time. After World War II, we had something called the GI Bill, and that meant that any veteran could go to any college of their choice with some kind of government supplement or support. And they didn't care whether you went to state university, whether you went to a Catholic school, whether you went to a Jewish school, whether you went to a Bible college.
And yet the opposition is so against choice, though, in education, you know, with what happened in California, that they couldn't even get it on the ballot.
Look, that's right. There's a lot of opposition, but they're fighting a losing game.
Good.
Because
everyone knows that, you know, they're trying to keep the iceberg from melting.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And it's slowly melting because everybody's fed up with the public schools, and some of the people most fed up with them are the public school teachers themselves.
Well, Dr. Vitz, you mentioned a very good point, how the government already is paying to send people to seminary, and they graduate, they become priests or pastors. So the government is already doing that.
And everyone was well served with it. People got educated, went on with their lives, and constructively contributed to the culture. So, in any case, so we've already been doing it there. We need a GI Bill, you see, for the kids, the secondary level. But that's where we are. The bureaucracy, the monopoly that we have in public education is really government education, and it's the last of the socialist bureaucracies left in the world. It's, you know, even Eastern Europe has finally gotten rid of them, and Soviet Union's finally getting rid of them, but we've still got this humongous thing here that eats up huge amounts of tax dollars, and the people who defend it are the people who are supported by that system. But it's not the real people, if you will. It's not your average parent. Here in New York and in the East, in places like Milwaukee, it's the black parents and the Hispanic parents. It's the ghetto kids and their parents who are very, very active to try to break out of the public schools because they're really trapped in them.
Well, that's true, but liberal educators say that giving parents a choice in education will help only the rich by subsidizing their kids in private school. But it'll help the poor families more. The rich families already send their children to private school. The poor families can't afford to. Choice in education will give poor families money, a voucher, to send their children to good schools. And here's the good part. Where the free enterprise system is allowed to work, the poor quality schools will either have to get better to compete or will close down. And thus, the schools will be improved for everyone. Dr. Vitz, our guest, has done extensive research on the bias in education, and his conclusion is that with the bureaucratic monopoly we have today, where Christians are forced to send their children to institutions that change their values and beliefs, and parents are forced to pay in their taxes to reprogram their kids, that this is unfair. And the answer is to give the parents the choice. Dr. Vitz, have Americans always had the chance to get a college education?
Oh, no, hardly anybody went to them. 100 years ago, I don't know, maybe less than 1% went to college.
Mm, boy, how many now? What's the percentage, do you know?
Well, it all depends what you mean by college. If you count it all the way, you know, count junior college up through 2 years there, maybe half, roughly go. I don't think we have 50% with a BA in the country, but maybe one out of four, or let's say 25%, or I guess maybe 35%, something like that, may end up with a BA now.
Although, what good can a BA do?
That's another problem. But at any rate, with the secondary schools, we've got a lot of problems. We know they're not teaching our kids well. We know we've never have so many paid so much for so little.
Very well put.
And we've got to make some changes. The cost of these bureaucratic systems has become unbearable, and so let's keep our eyes open for strategies. And I hope you people in California or maybe in up there in Minnesota someplace or over in state of Washington or Oregon are going to pioneer some real cracks in the bureaucratic facade and some freedom in education.
Well, they expect to get the choice in education back on the ballot in 94.
Well, that's terrific. You don't realize 10 years ago in 84 when I was just finishing up this study to suggest to people this notion of choice was so radical, people just, you know, thought you were so far out, it was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and now it's become a living political issue in every state of the union. The Wall Street Journal favors it on its editorial page probably once or twice a month.
We offer choices when it comes to college. Kids can choose what college they want to go to. Why don't we offer choices when it comes to secondary or some of the other grades in school?
Well, that's it. We need choice because, you know, lots of teachers want choice. They would love to be. I talk to secular humanist teachers who would love to be part of a secular humanist school where they could be upfront about it.
Sure.
I see.
And one of those parents who wanted that kind of education would be happy to send their kids there.
Although we've talked to some Christian teachers in public schools who are totally against choice because it threatens,
I know.
Yeah.
I know there are some because they think we should try to keep a Christian presence in the public schools and so on and so forth.
Mm.
And there is a modest argument for that. But the Christian presence in the public schools has been melting away on average every 5 or 10 years to a smaller and smaller proportion.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a grave injustice. It's not just that it's bad history. It's not just that it's a bad and deceitful description of our society. This is an injustice to the parents who are forced to pay for it.
Right.
It's an injustice and a serious one. It's the kind of injustice that led to the revolution that created our country. We are being taxed and not represented.
Yeah.
This is taxation without representation.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You're not even given fair representation in the history and society descriptions and our textbooks, and yet you're being forced to pay for the, you know, really, for the de-Christianization of your culture and of your own child.
Exactly right. Our forefathers went to war. For less than that, we're being forced to pay for the de-Christianization, I like the way you put that, of our own children and our own culture. Imagine, we're forced to pay for the distribution of condoms, and our children are taught that homosexuality is okay. Christians, you're forced to pay to have your child learn a distorted history where God is totally omitted and Christian influence in America has been irrelevant. Don't parents see the result of what their children are becoming as they reject the faith of their fathers?
And that's what we're teaching. And we're being forced, through our tax monies, to pay for this.
Many listeners may ask, look at how much money we've spent on these schools. Can't they simply be rehabilitated?
No, I told you that they can't be because historically no monopoly bureaucracy has ever reformed itself.
Mm-hmm.
The only time it happens a little bit is if there's challenge from the outside. But when you're a monopoly, you can't be challenged from the outside. You must have the monopoly broken.
Right.
So and that's what choice is about.
In a sense, then, yeah, choice would challenge this monopoly.
That's right.
Slightly.
Well, we're getting challenges from the business sector, too. They want people to graduate that are employable, and not getting that now.
Well, that's still another issue. As I said, they're not one thing is to say they're not educating our children about our religious heritage. They're not educating our children about the moral nature of life that we all believe in. Equally important, they're not educating our children in the basic skills. the employers have a vested interest in improving the system as well.
Well, some say you can't get a job without a college education.
Well, and then they have to educate you so that you can do the job.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Vitz, you've given us some very good insights here. We appreciate your work. I wonder if you'd like to conclude our program with any last thoughts.
Well, I guess the main thought is this. The public schools seem like they're a fixed thing in our society, but that's not true. We can change them. We can change education dramatically by bringing choice and freedom into how we educate our children. And I think all of us should begin to think that way and to be able to put behind the sort of fossilized, bureaucratic factory system that the public schools have become. And with this new choice and this new freedom, our country will benefit, our children will benefit, and even our wallets will benefit.
So true. Private schools have proven that more money is not the answer. Private schools educate better for about half the cost on the average. Our guest, Paul Vitz, professor at New York University, has proven through exhaustive research of our nation's school textbooks that there has been a total censorship of the role of religion and the influence of Christianity in American life. For more than 40 years, religion has been excluded from education. And if you remove God from school textbooks and classrooms, you teach that God is unimportant. You teach atheism. Is it any wonder the schools and the media are biased, even hostile toward God and His people? It's a predictable result of a bias that we have been teaching. American education needs choice in education. It's un-American to force citizens to pay to have their children's faith in God undermined any longer. It's time for a change. It's time to end the last bastion of this socialistic, bureaucratic monopoly. It's time for free enterprise. It's time for choice in education.
If you would like a cassette copy of today's program, please ask for tape number 191, Bias in Education. That's tape number 191, Bias in Education, for your donation of any amount to Issues in Education. We do suggest a minimum donation of $3 to cover the cost of the tape. Each tape does include two separate programs, one on Side A and another on Side B. And now, may the Lord give you the spirit of wisdom and revelation in the knowledge of Him.
Thank you for joining us. If you would like to write us, or you would like to request an audio tape of today's program, address your correspondence to Issues in Education, P.O. Box 3200, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. That address, once again, is Issues in Education, P.O. Box 3200, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. Please join us again next week at this same time for Issues in Education.